Welcome, everybody, to the Third and Gold podcast. I'm Tyler James, and I'm joined, as always, by the one and only Eric Hansen. Together, we cover Notre Dame football, recruiting, and more for blueandgold.com on the On3 network. Notre Dame's transfer portal roller coaster ride seems to have left everyone pleased with the end result after a slow and shaky start. Even after head coach Marcus Freeman met with reporters Wednesday for the first time since the early signing period, all anyone wants to talk about is the transfer portal. And that's why we had to bring on Mike Singer, our blue and gold teammate who led our transfer portal coverage. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Led? I don't know. Great team effort, but I'll take it. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. We appreciate you joining us. Well, I guess to start, I'm curious from your perspective, when did you get the sense or start to believe that the end result would be as good as it ended up being for Notre Dame in the transfer portal?
I want to hear you guys answer that as well, because I think we all bring different perspectives. Like, I know talking to Tyler Horka, like, he was on the, oh man, this is not going to be good. And I know Kyle Kelly was as well. But I'm just such an optimistic person by nature, and I just think that things are going to work out. That's just kind of how I am. So I think that kind of skewed me towards thinking that Notre Dame was going to figure it out. But the all those Monday cancellations didn't look good for sure. But what people need to understand is that some of them were Notre Dame driven, right? Like Brady Foley, the Tulsa tight end, who I think ended up at Louisville, Notre Dame canceled that one. They decided they didn't want to put those resources on another tight end, which I agreed with. I didn't think they needed another tight end, just like I didn't think they needed another running back. And, you know, it doesn't appear like that Notre Dame's going to take one. You know, the Oregon's the kid who ended up transferring to Oregon State, the quarterback from Mercer, Braden Atkinson, Notre Dame could have had him, but opted to not. The Michigan State defensive end, Jalen Thompson, Notre Dame decided to not move on him. So they could have gotten some of those guys. It was just an optics thing that made it look bad, that like, oh, you brought in these guys on the Monday night and they visit on Tuesday and you didn't get any of them. That just made it look bad. The other part about this is there were misses. The Texas Tech defensive linemen, you know, the Penn State defensive linemen that they wanted. There definitely were some guys that they missed. But I think what we need to train people to understand with the transfer portal is that it's not high school recruiting. Like in high school recruiting, you have your targets you offer early and that you bring in for visits and you really want those guys. And if you don't get them, well, then you go after new players. In the portal, it's completely different. The guys in Notre Dame ended up getting, none of them entered the portal on January 2nd when it opened. Like the guys who were in the portal right away are not necessarily the best and top options, because maybe a week goes by and better options come available. So it's just something that we kind of have to retrain ourselves. But I guess a long way to answer your question, Tyler, like, I always believed, but you know, I was there with some of you guys about like, yeah, I'm nervous early on, but I think that it was always going to work itself out.
For me, it was Wednesday of before they had their first commitment, after the first few days that the portal had been open. So it had been open almost the whole week. And I got an indication that I believed that there was a method to the madness. And then I started finding out how this portal cycle was different than others. I think that a lot of fans and media believe that, well, you don't contact people and they don't contact you until the portal's open and they're in the portal. It's not how it works. Most of this is done through third and fourth parties, kind of going back and forth. You know, I talked to some sources for the transfer portal kind of overview story, and an agent had booked flights for kids before Christmas,
yeah,
that were for January 2nd. But how Notre Dame was able to do it, it wasn't just them reaching out to people, it was people reaching out to them and wanting to be in. And so I'll use, and I won't use guys that are in the class, I'll use a position that they didn't get. There was an All-American running back that wanted in. There was another guy that was would have been an All-American had he been healthy all year, that wanted to come to Notre Dame, that they were seeking out Notre Dame. So this is how it works. And then they say, once they seek out Notre Dame, they're like, well, let's work on this before you're even in the portal. That right. way, when you get in the portal, there's not the competition. Somebody else doesn't try to add a $300,000 price tag to that same player by offering him sight unseen. And so Notre Dame didn't announce these guys, you know, really acknowledge them until we were right where they could enroll in school and have their deal signed. And it was a very smart strategy, but it wasn't something. And I don't blame fans for not understanding it because it right. was different.
Let me ask you this, Eric. I'm supposed to be the one you guys are interviewing, but hey, no, you're whatever. Fine. Eric, let me ask you this. So the running back example, right? He's interested in Notre Dame. I think a lot of us would be like, well, why is this All-American running back not at Notre Dame right now? It sounds like on paper he might be better than what Notre Dame has. But just because he was interested in coming to Notre Dame doesn't mean that the two parties started having conversations and then the guy was like, well, you need to pay me $2 million. You know, and it's like, okay, right. maybe the conversation ends right there. Did you get that sense at all?
I got the sense that they knew what the number would be. And it was not cost effective. And somebody asked me, I don't remember if it was in the chat or if it was on the message board, but they said, when you say cost effective, does that mean Notre Dame won't pay top dollar? They will, but everybody's got a budget. And so Notre Dame isn't going to pay the most of every, I think Texas Tech and Indiana are laying out more money, but Notre Dame is competitive. And so let's say the running back would have cost $2.5 million. If you could have got him for $1 million, you bring him in. For $2.5 million, it yeah. blows your budget. It's not worth it at a position you don't have a desperate need. Notre Dame had really big needs elsewhere, and they were able to fill those.
Yeah, Texas Tech and Indiana are also building most of their roster through the portal, so right. they don't have as many guys maybe coming back that they have to pay a ton of money for, whereas Notre Dame does. Like, what do you right. think? Like, if CJ Carr were in the portal, how much do you think Notre Dame would have to pay him? Like, the
oh goodness,
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like you have to pay your guys now. So I like how Notre Dame is building through the portal, and I'm sure you guys are going to talk a lot about the whole underclassmen thing. There's just so much reason to be excitement for the future of Notre Dame football with Marcus Freeman, and now you can bring in underclassmen. Like that is probably, Eric, one of the most important and most impactful developments in Notre Dame football in a while, that Notre Dame can do that. It opens the door for so much. We talked about that in our show on Wednesday night as well.
Right. And I'm going to let Tyler jump in on that because he did that story yeah. And did a lot of the deep research and stuff. What I will say is Marcus really did emphasize this in the press conference the other day. Retention was number one. They wanted the guys that they felt like they needed to have. They committed to that, and then you built around that. But Tyler, you did the story on the shifting priorities, or not shifting priorities, the shifting standards. I mean, I was talking to a source today, and this was in the works for months. But share with us what you found out in your story.
Yeah, and it kind of aligns with when I start to feel like, oh, maybe this is going to work out for Notre Dame, this portal. Like, if they're going to be able to take a Mylon Graham and a Quincy Porter, like when those names popped up, I was like, okay, that's cool that they're interested in that. But that doesn't seem like, based on what we've covered in transfer portal past, those don't seem like guys that are going to end up on Notre Dame's roster. And that the opposite of that happened. And Notre Dame has been willing and able to make these undergraduate transfers work. The research that I did under Marcus Freeman, since he's been head coach, the previous off seasons, Notre Dame added 35 transfers, and all but three of those were undergraduate transfers. And this transfer class has five or six. I think it depends on who's actually an undergrad. I think we're working to figure out who's in school, who hasn't graduated, all that stuff. But it could be six or seven. I mean, there's
six, seven.
There's okay. details we're still ironing out there, but the change is significant that Notre Dame's been able to work with admissions, work with its deans within its school to figure out what they can allow in terms of the transfers, the credits transferring over. and making this more realistic to bring in an undergrad who can be on a path to graduate from Notre Dame at some point. And if they can do that, that really changes the equation and what they're looking at for in the transfer portal.
Tyler, if you would have asked me 15 days ago before the portal opened or whatever it was, Mike, give me one player in college football who is the least likely to be able to join Notre Dame's football program based on what you know about how they've operated in the portal, I would have said Mylon Graham. The most least Eric, we talk about this all the time. Like if a sophomore, a true sophomore, right?
Yeah.
Is the most difficult person to get into Notre Dame. And then given Mylon Graham and like how Notre Dame wasn't able to recruit him out of high school, I'll just kind of leave it at that. I would have pointed to Mylon Graham. Notre Dame will not be able to recruit him. Mylon Graham has done really well as a student at Ohio State from my understanding. But that aside, I wouldn't have known that if you would have asked me that a couple weeks ago, but I would have said Mylon Graham. There's just no chance.
Right.
So now you're able to bring in someone like Mylon Graham. And I would just be so fired up if I were a Fighting Irish fan about this addition specifically, but also what it means for Notre Dame moving forward. And Eric, I know you've talked about before, like what this also means for other sports potentially.
Yeah.
Like can men's and women's basketball and lacrosse and baseball, can they get in on this too? It'll be really interesting.
It's going to be, you know, the program that I'm most familiar of those three that I follow the closest is women's basketball. As you know, they're going to have a huge turnover again. Now they're bringing in five freshmen and they'll get Leah Macy back from an injury. But to be able to have this huge pool of possible transfers, not this tiny little sliver, I think is really going to help Neil, because they'll need one or two. And they could be, this is how you retain Hannah Hidalgo for her senior year, is by surrounding her with really good talent. And now they have a better pool to do that with. Not, it won't be Hannah and the freshman, it'll be Hannah, the freshman, and probably a couple good portal players.
Mike, I wanted to get your thoughts. Like, I think part of what contributes to the reaction to how the portal started is also the almost impossible job it is for us to report on what Notre Dame is actually trying to do.
Yeah.
And like, because of the names that we're finally able to report based on information getting leaked and passed right around, like it almost makes those names become the most important, even if internally those aren't the most important. So
yeah.
I guess I wanted to see if you could share your perspective on what it's like covering the transfer portal and how it is so much different than covering from recruiting. At least maybe you don't agree with that, but that
no,
at least what your perspective is on that.
No, I do agree with it. For high school recruiting, it's just something that everyone knows, and is, whether you're a fan or a coach or us, like we all know high school recruiting. Things change and have changed over the years, but for the most part, high school recruiting is high school recruiting, right? Like calendar changes with multiple signing days or NIL being involved, high school recruiting is still high school recruiting. Portal, it's a completely different world from last year to this year. And it sounds like it might become completely different again if they adopt some new calendar or whatever. So there was a lot for all of us to learn. I think Notre Dame had to learn a lot. I think we had to learn a lot. And the fans did as well. I think so many of us were, I think I talked about this earlier, like just thinking of it like it's high school recruiting. And it's just not. Eric kind of talked about how the third and fourth parties were involved. Like high school recruiting is not like that. You just call up the person, and it's very, very easy. Covering the portal was difficult. Information is harder to get by. It's fairly easy in high school recruiting. There's not as many secrets, you know, these big secrets out there. So also your sources are a lot busier too. You don't want to bug them as much. It's like, there's so many things I would like to ask some of these people, but I have to tier them into priorities. Like, there's still things we're trying to figure out. I'm like, but I have bigger fish to fry on if I'm going to get to talk to these people. They're busy because, you know, the portal's crazy. And they also don't want anything leaked out. So the information I do get, I can't even share most of it So it's like, I'm sitting here, I have the story ready to go, but I can't post it because, you know, your sources don't necessarily want it out there. So all right, just wait till Pete Nagos puts it out, or Hayes Fawcett, or Steve Wolfong. Like, I can't control what those guys put out, but when they do, you'll see Mike Singer tweet about it or post on the message board, you know, 15 seconds later. So it was interesting in that sense. Like, you have your sources, like I said, they may not want something out there, but the agents of these players, and I've talked about this a ton, that's a new part of college football in the past year. And you saw it a ton in this transfer portal. They have so much control on what's getting out there now. Like, you see, you know, Pete Nakos of On3 tweet out, so-and-so is entering the portal. This person of this agency tells me, like, that wasn't a thing a year or two ago, right? Like, maybe a little bit, but now it's so many agents, and they have so much control on the information that's out there. So yeah, there's some things that Notre Dame, and it's not unique to Notre Dame, other schools as well. I talked to other reporters, they were running into the same things that I were, like, the school may not want something out there. The school, you know, and when I say school, again, just these various people connected to the program, they may not want that out there, but the agents of these players, they're getting it out there. So that was very interesting and tricky to follow. I did not know what to expect when the portal opened. I didn't know that it was going to be like two weeks straight of National Signing Day level business. I did not expect that, but it's what we got.
Yeah, there's at least the way that this portal was set up, there was a tug of war between what the agents wanted and what the schools wanted. And we were kind of in the middle
of, in terms of that. Messaging, right?
Right. In terms of messaging.
Yeah.
Mike, there are three players in this class I wanted to ask you about in particular, because you're familiar with them from high school recruiting. And we had Landon Tangwall on the Notre Dame football show Wednesday night, and he did a great job of providing current snapshots of these players. But you, as a guy that covers recruiting, you have to see around the corner what these players could turn into. And that's not what we were doing with the film. Landon was pointing out, here's the work they have to do to get to be those kind of players.
Just based off one game of film. Like, he did all of that research and watching the tape, just like one game. He did it that afternoon.
Right, which was incredibly valuable for us, but also valuable is projecting. So I'm going to ask you, let's start with Keon Keeley, and then we'll talk about the wide receivers.
Yeah.
So how would you project him? As a slimmer version of what we saw at Alabama, quicker, as a big defensive end? What do you think he can turn into?
I still think he's got to trim down 10 to 15 pounds, something I will talk to sources about and report more at Blue and Gold, like what Notre Dame's vision for Keeley is. But you see him at Bama in that college football playoff game against Oklahoma at 283 pounds, I believe is exactly what the Crimson Tide listed him at on their roster. He's still dropping back into coverage and had a pass breakup in that game. Like, he's still able to move pretty well at that size. I think that Landon did do a good job pointing out that in that game, like, his pass rush moves were pretty much just a bull rush. So is he just kind of leaning on strength? Can he get quicker, trim down, and then, you know, build on his pass rush skill set with Charlie Partridge? That's why I think that the sky is still the limit for him. I think that five-star potential is still there. Sources I talked to close to the football program said that when Keon visited Notre Dame, the staff was very, very impressed and very excited with this. I still think you have a ball of clay to work with. Like, Ebenezer Uwatade, who's coming in this 2026 class, has five-star potential. He might end up as a five-star by Rivals. Like, he's coming in as just this raw talent in a thin body who Notre Dame just can kind of mold and shape with how they want. I still think with Keeley, even though he's going on his fourth year of college football, I still think you have some of that there to work with. And I think that he is going to be very eager to get to work at Notre Dame. Like, I don't think Keon regrets going to Alabama, but I think he knows that Notre Dame is where he belonged all along. It was like, there's like in your own life, like you can look back on decisions you've made, things you've done, yeah, and be like, you know, maybe I didn't love that, but it led me to here. And I think with Keon, there's a bit of that. You know, we've all talked about the full circle moment cliche with him, but that's really what it is. So it's pretty cool as someone who, you know, my family is like 20 minutes from where Keon grew up. Like, so I made a ton of trips to Berkeley Prep and covered Keon as a high school player and got to know him really well. Such a good kid. And I'm just so excited to now cover him for the next couple of years.
There have been times where I've eaten Taco Bell and regretted it, but it's led me to this moment of eating turkey legs.
Do you want to know where I'm going after this podcast, Eric?
Taco Bell.
I am 100%. I just have to say this quietly because my wife could be listening. I'm 100% going to Taco Bell after this podcast. I am taking my AirPods, my phone. I'm going to dine in, and I am eating there. It's going to be it is my reward for, you know, going so heavy on portal coverage for the past couple of weeks. I cannot wait.
My reward is burnt ends. I'm having brisket burnt ends tonight. Ah,
they're in the refrigerator.
That's right. That's right. I go to Tobias Merriweather's house for and have a second helping. Okay, let's flip it to the receivers because I'm really excited about them. I know there was very little film of them and not a lot of high leverage situations at Ohio State, especially for Porter. But what's your expectation of what we could see in 26?
Yeah, I think that they have every opportunity to be starters. I mean, who is Notre Dame really returning at the receiver? Like, let's talk about Porter specifically. Who is his competition at boundary? Let's have a conversation about this, boys. Like
Gilbert and
Cam Williams, right? I mean, Gilbert had a pretty solid season, right? You know, he cut the touchdown against Miami. Like he showed flashes. Cam Williams has all the talent in the world, but still, Quincy Porter could walk in there and start as a redshirt freshman. He may have started as a redshirt freshman at Ohio State this year. It's very possible.
He would have at a lot of places, I think.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like he is talented. Notre Dame keeps getting these 1 year rentals at boundary receiver. You could have him for the next 4 years. You probably won't. Because I think he's going to be an NFL draft pick. And then at field, it's very interesting for Mylon Graham. He is, I think Jack Sobel talked about this. Like he's like Jordan Faison, but a little bit taller with a higher ceiling as an athlete. The sky's the limit for him. So you could do different things there. Like, yeah, you could rotate them at field receiver, but could you go more spread offense with CJ Carr at the helm and Faison's played slot? Like, what about just the different possibilities, Eric, with these young and talented wide receivers? I say young. It feels like Great House and Faison just got here. I guess they're going to be seniors now, which is crazy. But I think that you could start and primarily play Graham out there at the field. So, so much potential, so much excitement. But as Landon did talk about, yeah, there's room to improve. Let me just add this before I throw it back to you guys. When Mike Brown was hired as Notre Dame's wide receivers coach, a source had told me that Brown might not be a dynamic recruiter. Now, please don't hear me wrong. I didn't say a bad recruiter, but like a dynamic personality. I don't think that's Mike Brown. Mike Brown is more of a ball coach. He is X's and O's, technician. Like that's Mike Brown. Does that sound perfect for bringing in Mylon Graham and Quincy Porter, who might be raw as wide receivers? Porter more so than Graham. And some of those clips we watched of Graham, like he did look polished in route running and release, but maybe understanding of different elements of the game he may need to improve on. I think Mike Brown is the perfect position coach for those two guys.
I think there's probably some parallels between Mike Brown and Mike Mickens too, because I don't know that Mike Mickens is like this charismatic recruiter, but you see what he's done with recruits on the field. And hey, I want to go play for that guy. He's my path to the NFL.
Mickens might be both, honestly. Mickens might be both.
And the recruiting results are certainly there for Mike Mickens. And I think what he's done with the players at Notre Dame has contributed a lot to that. This isn't necessarily transfer portal specific, but one of our listeners, Marie Biafore, who's always good at sending us questions, sent us a question that I figured you were the best equipped to answer it. What are your thoughts on Notre Dame hiring director of player personnel Kenny Sanders and DJ Bryant, who also joined him from Penn State?
Yeah, in everything I've heard about them from their time at Penn State, everyone spoke highly about. And look, those guys' first day was okay. So the Monday was when all the cancellations happened for those portal visits, right? Like the Mateen cat from Wake Forest ended up at Texas Tech. I talked about Brody Foley, and that's when like everything seemed to be hitting the fan, right? And then Tuesday, you did have several visitors. That Wednesday, so just last Wednesday was their first day. Imagine everything going on at Notre Dame and transfer portal chaos and figuring things out. Hey, welcome DJ Bryant and Kenny Sanders to Notre Dame. This is your we brought you guys in last, what is it, July? It's like the dog days of summer, kind of easy acclimated to blue and gold. Yeah, imagine if it was National Signing Day was your first day, or you know, the national championship game last year, that was your first. That's kind of what it was like for those two guys. But I was told by sources around the program that they just hit the ground running. So I thought that was really good to hear. Don't know Bryant's specific role yet, but his title, but I'm sure he's just going to be another important part of the recruiting office. And he played in the NFL too. So I think he brings a unique pedigree for that. And then, yeah, you mentioned Sanders, the DPP. Also hearing he's going to be out on the road recruiting this month. So he's going to add a lot of value. And Notre Dame was down a man all of last year from what I'm told. So they were always going to hire someone to add to the recruiting office. But with Myron Tongavaloa Amosa moving to a non-personnel department role, he's now the director of player development. Notre Dame needed to hire two. So they brought in Bryant and Sanders. And, you know, obviously they worked together, and running backs coach Juwan Sider worked with them at Penn State. So, you know, all these guys, having those connections, I think made it pretty easy for the staff and Marcus Freeman to go ahead and make those hires.
We're really keeping you over what we asked for you for 20 minutes. So I'll throw out one more from me, and I kind of want to go around the room, and this is not portal related. This is something that happened today, and it's getting a lot of traction on our message board. And that's Marcus Freeman serving as a guest analyst for ESPN College Game Day Monday night before the national championship game. I wonder, let's start with Mike and then Tyler, and then I'll jump in. What are your thoughts on that? Good or bad? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Okay, so the bad of it potentially being ESPN, right? Or the anti-ESPN stuff. Is that kind of what you're alluding to, Eric?
Yeah, there's people on the board that say, I'm not watching. Why is he doing this? They're going to take advantage of him. He should boycott them and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think Marcus is probably thinking he's more upset with the committee and how they handled that than ESPN. Like, sure, did ESPN have some different theatrics that we don't all love or whatnot? Sure. But at some point, you just got to be like, it is what it is. ESPN is always going to be the behemoth of sports media broadcasting. So if this benefits Notre Dame by him being on there, would you not do that out of spite? You know, like, I don't know. And it appears his answer is, you know, we'll do it. Now, in terms of the, wow, what an amazing exposure this is for recruits, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know how many recruits are watching College Game Day. I would have, and I bet my, like my class did when I was in high school in 2012, but I don't know how many recruits watch College Game Day now. I feel like they're doing other things. They may watch all the clips on social media from it, but I don't know how many are watching it.
He's so, also going to be on at halftime too. And again, maybe they're running to get snacks and go to the bathroom.
No, I missed that part about the halftime. So I rescind my comment about that. But yeah, the pregame, I don't know how many are watching. It's a neat thing, and it's I would say brand building, but Notre Dame and Marcus Freeman are already massive, obviously, but it only helps that.
Yeah, I think I agree with Mike that like College Game Day isn't the thing that high schoolers are watching the most, especially high school football recruits. I would say that the national championship game would be the one that they're maybe more likely to watch because, I mean, maybe you're a basketball player and you're not at home and watching that, but I would imagine most of those guys that are interested in college ball will be watching the national championship game. Whereas like on a Saturday, they could be traveling somewhere. So they're not tuning into College Game Day on a Saturday morning.
Maybe you're right. Yeah. Maybe because Marcus Freeman's on there, maybe they do want to watch it more now. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like the idea of like, why is he going on ESPN? I mean, weren't we hearing for like a month, like, why isn't Marcus Freeman talking? Why aren't we hearing from Marcus Freeman? And now he's going to be on College Game Day and people are upset that he's on a platform that they don't like. I mean, it's an example. It's like, you literally can't please everyone. Like there's always going to be someone that doesn't like that. Notre Dame isn't going to be able to take down ESPN by Marcus Freeman refusing to go on their shows. Like that's not what's going to happen. This isn't, that's not the best path forward for Notre Dame. And so I don't think that there's any like harm to this. I understand people, Notre Dame fans might not want to watch ESPN, and that's okay. I don't think he's talking to Notre Dame fans either. Like he's trying to make more Notre Dame fans and make more people want to like Notre Dame. And so I think that I think he'll be entertaining. It'll be interesting to see if he gives anyone a hard time for things that they've said throughout the season. He says he tunes out the noise, but maybe someone will give him some background on who said what about who going into that appearance.
I love it. I think he made a really smart decision, and part of it is because of who Marcus Freeman is. You're going to see his authenticity. You're going to see him create his own narrative. He doesn't need somebody to interpret what he might be thinking. And we saw a lot of that during the time he was quiet between the snub and when he had the press conference yesterday, and a lot of people kind of hijack the narratives. If my head coach were Pat Narduzzi, and I'm not picking on Pat, but he kind of deserves it, I wouldn't roll him out there. I'd be worried about how he was going to respond to difficult questions. I think Marcus will really finesse it very well. And I'm old enough to feel like sometimes when you hold a grudge, the person you're hurting the most is yourself. Sometimes it's better to be smart than right. And I think Marcus Freeman will do great with this. And, you know, when I watch him on Here Come the Irish, and I have watched quite a bit of it, not just because I've had a couple of cameos, you know, I'm like, get this old fart off the screen that's talking about the drum circle and hear more of Marcus. And how he reacted to the snub in the moment was magic. I mean, it's like, I would want my grandkids to hear that and adopt that. I mean, I learned a lot about life listening to Marcus, and he's a lot younger than me. And so I think it's a good thing.
Let me ask you guys a question. Because I post about the College Game Day thing on our Instagram page, and someone commented, and it has 31 hearts on the comment. And I want to know if you guys agree with this or not. Joseph says, ESPN is using him to get views because there are no big brands in this national championship.
I think people are fascinated by it. I mean, Miami is a big brand, and IU has a very big following, as was noted in their last game. Look at the crowd in the stadium. I think this is one of the more interesting national championship games. It's new blood. I think college football gets hurt sometimes by it always being Alabama or it was always Clemson for a while. I think this is a fascinating one. I don't know that Marcus Freeman, like, are people really tuning in just because of Marcus Freeman? I don't know that is what's
maybe some happen. Moms. I don't know.
yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but who knows?
He definitely has the female population very tuned in. But my oldest son was calling me, so could you repeat the question? Because okay. I had to text him.
ESPN is using Marcus to get views because there are no big brands in this national championship. I saw that, and I really hope Joseph is not listening to this. I thought that was one of the dumbest things I've ever seen. But apparently 31 people agreed. I could not believe that.
Well, he must have a big fan club. I just, you know, this is where we are as a society these days. There are really bad takes out there, and this is one of them.
I'll sorry, Joseph. And if anyone agrees with that, you're not. I don't think you're dumb. I just think it's a dumb take. Sorry, that's how I'm gonna sign off by throwing that up.
Leave it.
A mark on the Taco Bell would be is a bad take, but your pipes are wired for Taco Bell. Mine are not.
Well put.
All right, Mike, we really appreciate you taking time to join us today. Great job on all the coverage of the transfer portal. And obviously we'll have plenty more over at blueandgold.com. And we'll have you around here more often. We'll have you on Football Never Sleeps. We'll be joining you over on the Blue and Gold channel. If you guys aren't subscribed there, make sure you do that as well. And you'll hear Mike's voice plenty. All right, have a good
one, Mike. Thank you, guys. All right.
We are continuing to see an influx of new subscribers to blueandgold.com, and we want to give you a great deal to join our growing community. New subscribers get 50% off the first year of subscription to blueandgold.com. So instead of paying $119.99, you only have to pay $59.99 for the first year. There's a link to our subscription page in the video and podcast descriptions. You can also find the join button on our blueandgold.com homepage. All right, now it's time for questions. You can submit questions to us on Twitter or the Loose Emoji Board before every podcast. I'm at TJamesND and Eric's at EHansonND. First one I have for us, Eric, is from NDBSC on the Loose Emoji Board. Are we finished in the portal, or are there any other possibilities?
I think we're done. I mean, players still have up until midnight on Friday to enter the portal, and then they don't have to choose a school right away. Notre Dame will be in class for a week. I think the ad drop deadline is Tuesday. I talked to somebody about that. I think there's some wiggle room there, but I think it is individual with deans and classes in terms of if you've missed too much time already. I don't see Notre Dame adding somebody.
Yeah, and I think they could, and I don't know that it would be necessarily a headliner. Like, it could be a walk-on guy that transfers in and joins the team in the summer. That could end up playing a special teams role. So I think there could be some changes still as it relates to transfers coming in. But I think for the most part, this is what Notre Dame's transfer portal class is going to be. All right. Next question is from at Charles W. Wolf. In terms of program portal departures, was the total number about where you expected it? Also, do you see Spencer Porath as a likely starter, a competitor for a role, or a depth piece?
I had said 7 or 8. If it's 8, then I was pretty close.
Departures? Departures.
Well, again, when you do the math, maybe just a little bit under, because they're at 98 scholarships right now. If Jason Anya gets approved, I think 97, they're right in that area. They're over the 95. That's kind of their target area. So I would have thought there were going to be a few more of the departures. As far as the kicker, I think, you have competition. That's how you get better. And I would expect Spencer Porath to win that competition. He is really good. I think Eric Schmidt will be good someday. I don't think he's at that level, but he could surprise you because he's got a lot of talent.
Yeah, I think they recruited Porath expecting him to be able to win the job. I think it's always a competitive situation if you have two kickers like that. But I think he has the experience. I believe he's 22 of 28 in his career so far. And Eric Schmidt is 0-for-3 in terms of field goals. So I think he has the leg up, and I think it's his job to lose. All right. Marie Biafore asked, how surprised were you that Anthony Sacca entered the portal?
A little bit. Because he kind of knew what his situation would be walking in the door, knew that there was a lot of competition at linebacker. And yet, you know, he's kind of the size and skill set where he makes for a better defensive end. But if you're Anthony, you kind of look at, well, there's not a clear path to getting on the field as a linebacker. And then you look at the defensive ends and you say, there's not a really quick and easy path. You know, I would be a developmental guy and probably not play until later in my career. There may be schools that are willing to pay me because he's a pretty high recruit and I could play linebacker for those schools. And so from that standpoint, I'm not surprised that I knew that there would be interest. It was just whether, the Notre Dame degree meant more to him while he was developing.
Yeah. I wasn't terribly surprised just because of, I felt like he was a bit of a tweener in terms of, is he a linebacker? Is he a defensive end? What's his future look like? And maybe what Notre Dame wants him to do isn't what he wants to do. And he feels like he has a different vision for what's ahead of him in terms of his position moving forward. So I think anytime you have guys like that, where there's maybe some uncertainty or it's not exactly clear in terms of what's ahead for them, I think there's always a chance for those kinds of guys to enter the transfer portal. All right, next question and the next several questions. Beef 2025 came with lots of questions for us over on the Loose Emoji board, and here's our first one. Do you think Freeman will get any blowback from the Notre Dame administration if he follows the current blueprint of processing or turning over the bottom quarter of the roster every year? It might be hard to sell 4-for-40 and graduation rates if Notre Dame tells guys like Dixon, Reef, Solstead, Hulak, et cetera, that they don't have a spot next year.
So I'm assuming Beef is probably closer to my age group than your age group. Tyler, this was a huge deal in the Holtz era. Holtz got in hot water with the AD and the administration because with very few transfers, but transfers period, he got a lot of blowback over retention. And not holding on to those players. The whole grad rate thing for a while has been changed. It's recalculated. When I started in the business and for many years, you could go to Notre Dame, transfer, graduate early at your new school and develop a cure for cancer, and it would count as a strike against Notre Dame. That is no longer the case, how they process that. I also think, especially when we look at the standards, admission standards for transfers, the administration understands we're in a new era. We're not playing by the same rules, but they still want to sell the 4-for-40. They still want to do well in the graduation rates. It's calculated different. So I do not think there's pressure. The last thing I'll say about this is I don't know that Notre Dame is telling guys, young guys, we don't have a spot for you. I think what they do sometimes is, let's say in the situation of Cree Thomas, for example, there's another school offering life-changing money and there's not a clear path for him. And they say, look, we're not going to tell you, you need to stay with us if you think that's a better opportunity for you. Now may they, with people that have their degrees that would be coming back for fifth year, might those guys be shown the door? Yes. But I don't think that they're going to do it with underclassmen.
Yeah, and one of the ways they've done it, and this isn't new, is those guys get medical hardships or whatever. They become medical exemptions, and then sometimes those guys stay, sometimes they leave. You look at Aiden Gobira or Tyson Ford. Those are guys that were off of the roster but still on scholarship at Notre Dame because of medical reasons. That's an avenue that can be taken advantage of and isn't necessarily new. So I think if you're going to take undergraduate transfers, I think this is all part of the conversation. There's a realization and understanding that you're going to lose undergrad transfers too. So I don't think it's that new of a process. It may be expanding more. But yeah, I just, I can't remember the last time football graduation rates were really like trumpeted in the same way. Like it's just not something that is talked about as much, and obviously still matters. And Notre Dame can point to, hey, these are the guys who stayed at Notre Dame. If you stay at Notre Dame, you will graduate. And that's all they're right. Like you can't promise, well, if you leave, you're going to be able to come back and graduate. Like, so I think there's still a way to push your messaging. Like, hey, come here, get an education, graduate, and you're going to be set for life. And I still think you can push that, even if some guys, even if you're going to have examples of guys that didn't stay and didn't graduate. All right. Next question from Beef 2025. Any updates on injured guys like Cooper Flanagan and Charles Jagusa? When can Jagusa start building back the upper body strength that he surely lost over the last year?
So I've had updates on both of those guys in late December. Flanagan is supposed to be 100% for spring. I still think there's 100% optimism that that's going to happen. Otherwise, I think you would have seen Notre Dame dip into the portal for a tight end.
Right.
With Charles Jagusa, again, I reported this in late December. There were some complications and additional procedures besides the cleanup in October. And this is from what I have read with the injury, the humerus injury, which is your upper arm, that it's not uncommon for there to be some nerve damage. And in most cases, it is not permanent nerve damage. And around that time, there was optimism that they finally were seeing progress with that. But nerve repair is very slow, and you can't rush that process. Again, this is from what I've read. This isn't my Ohio State degree talking. I didn't take any of those classes. So, but I do not think that he probably will be ready for spring. I think summer would be a more realistic timeline. And how quickly he can do the upper body stuff, I think, is very much related to how the nerve is healing. I think the bone is not a concern. It's the nerve healing that's the concern at this point.
So I just want to make sure we're clear. I understand, and listeners understand. Are you saying there is nerve concern with Charles, or are you speculating that there could be nerve concern?
What I'm saying is there was nerve concern because it initially wasn't showing the repair. It is okay. On the road to repairing. It's a slow process. I don't want to bring in Jalen Smith's injury because it was a different situation.
Right, right.
But if you remember,
yep,
that nerve took a long time to heal. It eventually did. And once it starts, you could say like an inch a week or something. I don't remember what the general, but it's something that, you know, like rehab isn't going to help that. So there's right. optimism that this is moving in the right direction. That's the best way I can phrase it. But
no, I think that makes sense.
Yeah.
The only thing I'll add is that Cooper Flanagan was pictured working out. It looked like he was doing hang cleans or some sort of upper body workout or full body workout, I would describe that as. So I think Cooper Flanagan's on the right track and someone that could play an important role for Notre Dame next season. All right, next question from Beef 2025. Even with the portal additions at defensive tackle, Notre Dame needs Jason Onye back badly. Do you see Onye / Notre Dame going the litigation route if the NCAA denies his petition?
Well, as we are recording this, there has not been a decision. I would not be surprised if we heard today, although with the NCAA, it's always a little bit of a crapshoot, but I wouldn't be surprised. I'd say let's find out what goes on first before we take the step of should there be litigation. I know that Trinidad Chambliss is taking that, and I think Ross Dellinger was the one that tweeted it. Ross is a national reporter for Yahoo Sports, and he does some things for On3 as well. And he said that where they're finding more success is not in the federal courts, it's in the state courts where they're finding success. And so that could be an avenue for Jason, but let's just see if the NCAA does the right thing first.
Yeah, I think from a litigation standpoint, I wonder, like, Jason hasn't talked a ton about what he went through, right? And I wonder if it's something he wants to, like, have to open himself up to if there's litigation and stuff. Like, I think going through the NCAA process is a little more private than what would happen if there's litigation. And so I think that would be, it might be up to his comfortability with doing something like that if they wanted to proceed with something like that. And obviously you wouldn't do that unless you felt like it could be successful. And so I think they'll have to weigh the options once they hear back from the NCAA. All right, next question from Beef 2025. He's heavy on the defensive line stuff. Any thoughts on the development of guys like Cole Mullins and Christopher Burgess Jr.? These are the two that seem to have the ability to contribute to a defensive tackle rotation. I know we love to mention guys like Armel Mukum, Sean Sevillano, and even Brennan Vernon, but they have done nothing, have been around for a while, and have done nothing at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think that's a little unfair to Sevillano because it was a redshirt freshman this past year.
Yeah.
And he's at a developmental position. These aren't positions where generally you have, and Notre Dame hasn't had a lot of plug and play players, especially in their interior. And guys have these spurts sometimes that kind of come out of nowhere. I felt like Cole Mullins did this last year. But of the two guys that you mentioned, Mullins and Burgess, to me, Burgess is one of the most interesting people on the defensive line roster because he has incredible talent. He was a little reluctant about the move inside. I think once he buys into it, and I think he has, and he locks in, look out. I think he's a guy that could be in the two deeps. He's a guy that could still be a year away, and spring will give us some clues on that, but he's a guy with incredible talent and incredible drive. I would not count him out. Mullins shocked me last year just because he was a guy that wasn't that highly regarded as a recruit. And when he's been healthy, he seems to play way above that recruiting pedigree. What I'm curious about with Mullins is with now the players they have from the portal, is he a better fit outside at a defensive end, or can he help them more as an inside player? I think that's going to be interesting.
Yeah. It's funny. You mentioned the first thing that came to mind too, when I read this question, like I don't put Armel Mukum and Sean Sevillano in the Brennan Vernon category. I think those two are different right than Brennan Vernon. Like, for instance, if Brennan Vernon entered the transfer portal, I don't know that he would have a spot back on the team in the way that Armel Mukum did. I think those guys are developing and trying to make some progress there, whereas I'm not sure that there's room left for that with Brennan Vernon. But we'll see. Maybe we'll be surprised and he comes through late in his career. Burgess, like you said, I think I'm interested to see what he looks like at his new weight. I was told that he was up to 297 at the end of the year, and you could see it in one of the clips that Notre Dame released of its workout from Monday or Tuesday. I don't remember which day of the week it was. Maybe it was later in the week, but he's thick. He's way, you can tell he's put on weight and he looks more like a defensive tackle than a defensive end. I think that was his best position, and something that I thought would be a possibility for him when he was a high school recruit. And I'm curious to see what he looks like. I think he can really move up the depth chart quickly if he puts that all together. I'm curious about Mullins in terms of what his physical development is. I don't have any as much detail about what he's at weight wise, because I wonder if he could still be a defensive end if they need him to, because he is a smaller guy, or a thinner guy, I would say. And if you get Jason Onye back, do you need him to be your sixth or seventh defensive tackle, where he could be a fourth defensive end or fourth or fifth defensive end? Because if you get Onye back, I think you're looking at Onye, Francis Brew, Gray, Hughes, Burgess, and then Mukum, Mullins. So, like, I think there's – you all of a sudden you have that depth you were looking for at defensive tackle if you get Onye back. If you don't get him back, then maybe there's more of a need to keep Mullins there. So I'm just sort of curious how that all plays out. All right, our next question, and I think our last one from Beef. Have you heard any positive development of defensive linemen like Dominic Hulak, Davion Dixon, Joseph Reeve, and Gordy Solfstead, or do you see them getting recruited over and processed out from Notre Dame in this new system? It's hard to see the developmental guys lasting for 3 to 4 years with expensive portal defensive tackles and recruiting picking up last cycle and almost assuredly under Partridge.
Well, yeah, there. I mean, the way that you can, again, Notre Dame doesn't need to just recruit grad transfers. And so when you're getting these guys with multiple years of eligibility, it does change the equation some. But Notre Dame also recruits guys that they knew that were going to be developmental players. And those players knew they were going to be developmental players. So I don't know that they're necessarily trying to push those guys out the door, or they just say, oh gosh, they got a portal guy, they give up. You know, the competition can make them better. Of those guys, I would say Reef is the guy that's farthest ahead, that there seems to be the closest to getting into a rotation spot. But again, you know, Cole Mullins, when he got healthy, all of a sudden he was a guy that jumped over some people. So I wouldn't sell any of those guys short. I think Solstead had the longest way to go because he had the most change in his body composition that he had to do. He was an outside guy in high school that, you know, was recruited to be a long-term defensive tackle. So I think it's really early to give up on any of those guys. Davion Dixon was injured and missed a lot of training camp and practices. He's healthy now, and from what I've heard, they like him. So I wouldn't give up on him. And again, he's got a – we used to say that Sean Cebolano and Davion Dixon had different body types than everybody. I guess Teon Gray, you could put in that category, although he's taller than them. But, yeah, they're the guys that are way over 300.
Yeah, it's certainly too early to write them off. I don't think it's a coincidence that Reef may be the furthest ahead when all those other guys have dealt with injury issues. Solstead had a knee injury that wiped out his senior season of high school. Hulak had a knee injury last season that wasn't reported by Notre Dame, but I know that he did miss time because of a knee injury. Dixon had the injuries that you mentioned. And so I think there's plenty of time for them to still develop. I don't know that Notre Dame has recruited so many guys that are going to come in and be automatically ahead of them on the roster. Yes, I think some of these transfer portal guys will be, but I don't know that it's a guarantee that Ebenezer Iwatade, who I think is a developmental high ceiling defensive end, is necessarily going to jump Dominic Hulak right away on the depth chart. So I think there's still time to sort out what their futures are. And I think that, you need to have these numbers to sort of work through who's going to hit, who's going to miss at the defensive line positions. And a lot of guys are going to have chances to play. So I think it's too early to write those guys off.
Right. And just because you're a portal guy doesn't mean you're guaranteed a spot. There's expectation, but we saw with Rod Hurd II, Adon Shuler beat him out. We saw with Jalen Stroman, Tay Johnson moved ahead of him. Those guys were both valuable as transfer portal guys, but they weren't starters.
Right. All right. Next question is from Marie Biafore at Biafore _ Marie. Do you think we'll see any coaching departures in the next month?
I don't think so. I don't think that's in the cards, but until that carousel in the NFL stops spinning, because it affects college jobs too, not just at Notre Dame. Let's say a coordinator at another school goes to the NFL, and then somebody is interested in Mike Mickens, for example. So until that stops spinning, I'd never say never. We've seen these late cycle changes before.
Yeah, we're just getting into the NFL cycle. So still another wave of coaching moves to sort of sort through to make sure that Notre Dame gets through it without any more changes. But I would say that I'm not anticipating any, but I wouldn't be shocked if something happened that changed that. Michael Kitch at MS Kitch SR says, I know the stock answer one game at a time, but the pressure must be getting pretty real. How will this year be different? The schedule, the deepest roster of all time, and a lot of money on the line.
As far as pressure?
I don't know.
I would say the way that Marcus Freeman looks at it and what he talks to his team about is pressure is a privilege. And so what separates, I guess, a Notre Dame football player and the Notre Dame football coach from a lot of people in life is that they embrace the pressure rather than cowering from it. And so I think they like that. I mean, if you don't want the pressure, don't come to Notre Dame.
Right.
So that's how I look at it. I think it's exciting.
Yeah, I don't think there's a difference in the pressure. I think it's the same. Well, what could be the difference in terms of the results? I think a returning starting quarterback and the same offensive coordinator makes a big difference. You also have Chris Ash returning as a defensive coordinator rather than just coming in. A lot of returning pieces on defense, particularly in the secondary, that got better as the season went on. So I think the pressure is the same. I believe that Notre Dame is trending in a way that the results will be different in terms of being able to potentially go undefeated next season. All right, next question is from at Charles W. Wolf, and this is our last question. Please assign coaches Freeman, Denbrock, and Ash a New Year's resolution that you think they need to implement to improve in 2026. Also, just wanted to fit in one last Cody Bahoon joke at Eric's expense. Still my favorite podcast blooper. Wishing all the transfers the best.
Charles, you lively little minx. And I got called a lively little minx on my chat yesterday. So that was a highlight. To me, it says something when it's not only a memorable blooper, but there's a menu from which to choose what the most memorable blooper is. For me, my oh crap is my favorite blooper of all time, but Bodhi Cahoon is probably in the top 100. Okay, as far as the resolutions, boy, it's funny to assign them to other people. I didn't even assign one to myself. Freeman's resolution, keep questioning everything. It's working for him. Denbrock, no Wildcat in 2026. And Chris Ash, loosen up a little bit. Have some fun. You know, let us see who you are as a person, because you hear a lot of great things about Chris Ash. We see somebody that's very guarded. I understand why he is. But I think he can loosen up a little bit now and be himself.
Yeah, my resolutions were for Marcus Freeman finding a way to make sure that the team is better prepared to make it through September unscathed. For Denbrock, develop a more dynamic passing game and get a backup quarterback ready. And for Ash, build upon the success of last season by making sure the pass rush and coverage schemes match up better, particularly early in the season. So, we're building towards an exciting 2026 season now that we're getting towards the end of this portal cycle, but a lot to look forward to. And that will be it for this week's episode of the Third and Gold podcast. We should be back to a more regular schedule after the busy time of the holidays and the transfer portal window. You can find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcast homes. Search for Notre Dame Football with Eric Hansen and Tyler James. If you're not already subscribed to us in those proper feeds, we will have plenty of written coverage over at blueandgold.com if you get snowed in. So stick with Blue and Gold for all your Notre Dame coverage needs.